When you finally hit save on a massive project or like finish building something incredibly complex, there's this comforting feeling of permanence.
Oh, for sure. You feel like it's locked in.
Right. You've brought something into the world, it exists, it's on your hard drive or it's in the cloud, and it just feels solid.
Yeah, you assume it's safe.
Exactly. But we have this massive blind spot, I think. We implicitly trust the bedrock beneath our creations. We just assume that because we built the house, the ground underneath it isn't going to suddenly disappear.
Which is a super dangerous assumption, honestly, because, that bedrock is almost always owned by someone else.
Yeah.
Or in some of the cases we're looking at today, the actual blueprints we use to understand that bedrock were just fundamentally flawed right from the start.
And that structural collapse is exactly what we are seeing across the board today. It is Tuesday, June 30th, 2026.
A very busy day.
Insanely busy. We're looking through the latest edition of the Tech and Night Brief, which is the curated late night source we're pulling from for this deep dive. And there is this undeniable through line connecting everything.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
We are seeing physical products, massive corporate ecosystems, fundamental models of the cosmos, and even critical software infrastructure just, all collapsing overnight.
Forcing a complete rebuild from scratch for a lot of these folks.
Exactly. And that is our mission for this deep dive with you today. We are going to trace how the foundations of our world are shifting and figure out what happens when you have to just, start over.
The sheer scale of what's being torn down and reconstructed today is staggering. I mean, it literally ranges from consumer plastics all the way out to the edge of the observable universe.
It's wild. Okay, let's unpack this starting with the consumer plastics because it's a brutally expensive lesson in building on land you don't actually own.
It really is.
So the brief details, this massive fallout with D Brand, they make those high-end gaming accessories. And they recently opened pre-orders for this $100 custom wrap for the Steam Deck.
Right, the one that looked like the companion cube from Portal.
Yes. They engineered this thing to look exactly like the companion cube. And the source notes, they poured over 1,000 hours of engineering and design into getting the physical precision absolutely perfect.
1,000 hours of R&D for a molded plastic and vinyl accessory is an incredible capital investment. I mean, that's not cheap.
No, not at all. And it all just evaporated overnight. They had to cancel the entire project, pull the plug, and refund every single pre-order.
Because Valve, who actually owns the Portal IP, slapped them with a cease and desist order.
Yep, D Brand had to publicly admit they never actually secured a license to make the thing in the first place. But here's what I don't understand about their calculus here. Well, D Brand is not some naive startup, right? They know how copyright works. Why on earth would a company risk 1,000 engineering hours without sending a single email to Valve's legal department first?
Well, what's fascinating here is that it comes down to a calculated, albeit disastrous, assessment of corporate behavior.
What do you mean?
So, Valve has historically been the sort of cool uncle of the gaming industry. They're famous for turning a blind eye to, and sometimes even actively hiring, community modders who tinker with their IP.
Okay, right. They like Sand Project.
Exactly. D Brand likely looked at that track record and made a massive assumption. They basically conflated Valve's leniency for free digital fan art with the leniency for strict physical commercialization.
Ah, so they banked on the old ask for forgiveness, not permission strategy.
Totally. They probably assumed the viral marketing of a cool product would just outweigh any legal friction.
But $100 premium physical product crosses a pretty hard legal threshold, doesn't it?
Precisely. If Valve doesn't protect their IP against a highly profitable commercial enterprise, they actually risk diluting their own trademark.
Wow, so they had to act.
Right. And the mechanics of a cease and desist here, it isn't just about deleting a file on a server, it physically halts supply chains.
It's like spending months meticulously building a beautiful custom mansion, but realizing you built it on a plot of land you never actually bought.
That's a perfect analogy. D Brand has to eat all the tooling costs, the prototyping, the marketing spend, and the administrative nightmare of refunding thousands of customers.
It's just a total disaster.
They gambled their entire foundation on another company's goodwill, and the owner of the bedrock simply pulled it away.
Yeah, it's a failure caused by breaking a known rule. But zooming out to the broader gaming industry today, you might be wondering why the corporate drama of video game studios matters to anyone outside of gaming.
It's a fair question.
But it matters. Because it is the perfect microcosm for what happens when you follow all the rules, build something incredible, and the corporate machinery just decides to bulldoze you anyway.
Yeah, we are seeing the harsh reality of post-merger economics playing out in real time today, especially as the fiscal year closes for Microsoft.
Right, the end of June. So the brief highlights that Undead Labs, the studio behind the State of Decay franchise, is facing imminent closure.
Which is just heartbreaking.
It is. Microsoft is desperately hunting for a buyer, and if one doesn't materialize today, roughly 110 people lose their livelihoods. And it's not just them. The restructuring is threatening other prestigious studios under Xbox, like Compulsion Games and Ninja Theory.
It's a massive shakeup.
But the logic here seems completely broken to me. Microsoft literally just showcased State of Decay 3 for the PS5 at their massive summer showcase a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it looked great.
Reports indicate the game is basically feature complete and just entering final polish. Why acquire this massive talent pool and fund years of development only to burn the orchard right before the harvest?
Well, because the harvest no longer meets the new threshold for success, you have to look at the massive gravitational shift caused by Microsoft's $69 billion acquisition of Activision Blizzard.
Right, that changed everything.
It really did. When a company takes on that level of financial weight, the mandate shifts instantly from building diverse portfolios to ruthless cost optimization.
So they only want the mega hits.
Exactly. They are looking for guaranteed billion-dollar returns. We're talking Call of Duty and Diablo-level franchises.
So a studio of 110 people, even if they deliver a profitable, critically acclaimed game, it simply doesn't move the needle enough to justify their operational footprint on a spreadsheet.
That's the cold math of it, unfortunately. But the structural collapse here isn't just about the current game getting canceled. It's about the permanent evaporation of institutional
Oh,
knowledge.
that's a great point.
Game development isn't just an assembly line. It is a highly specialized, localized culture.
Especially with a game like State of Decay. I mean, it's not a generic point-and-shoot game. It's this very weird, specific blend of zombie survival, community management, and permadeath mechanics.
And balancing those specific mechanics takes a team years of trial and error to get right. That knowledge lives in the collective heads of those 110 developers.
Once they're gone, it's gone.
Right. When you shutter the studio, you don't just lose a product, you shatter that collective brain trust. Even if Microsoft keeps the IP and hands State of Decay to another studio 5 years from now, that new studio will be starting from zero.
So the unique architectural knowledge is permanently erased just to balance a quarterly ledger.
Exactly.
It creates this incredibly stark contrast. Microsoft is actively erasing its unique studios because new properties look too risky. Meanwhile, here's where it gets really interesting. The brief shows other gaming giants are basically trying to resurrect their past to secure their future.
Yeah, risk mitigation through resurrection. It's a huge trend right now.
Right. We finally have validation of the massive Project Camelot leak for the Warcraft franchise. Data miners pulled hard evidence from Blizzard's own server files.
And the slate is pretty staggering, honestly.
It is. World of Warcraft Classic plus next quarter, a brand new Warcraft Chronicles real-time strategy game in 2028, an Arthas action RPG in 2029, plus two Hollywood TV shows.
It's a massive push into nostalgia.
And it's not just Blizzard. Over at Ubisoft, they are launching Assassin's Creed Black Flag, resynced on July 9th. So are we just stuck in the loop of polishing the past?
Well, it's easy to dismiss it as a cynical cash grab, but the
Mm-hmm.
engineering effort here suggests something much more sophisticated. They aren't just applying a new coat of paint to old code.
Doing a full rebuild.
Yeah, they are fundamentally reconstructing these worlds. Take the Black Flag release. The
Yeah.
source details that they didn't just upscale the textures, they completely rebuilt the game from the ground up in the latest iteration of the Anvil engine.
Wow, okay. And moving to a new engine fundamentally changes the physics of the world, right?
Yeah.
Because Black Flag is a pirate game.
Right.
The entire experience hinges on how your ship interacts with the ocean.
Exactly. The new Anvil framework allows for real-time fluid dynamics and volumetric weather systems that simply weren't mathematically possible on 2013 hardware.
Oh, that makes a huge difference.
It does. The way a rogue wave hits the hull or how the wind impacts the sails, the underlying physics simulation is entirely new. They are keeping the blueprint of the house that players love, but they are pouring a completely modernized, structurally superior foundation underneath it.
Though the brief did mention the trailer suffered from some YouTube compression issues, right?
It did, yeah. And we still don't have confirmation if the multiplayer is returning, but the core technical upgrade is undeniable. They are doing 4K at 60 frames per second, ray tracing, and even 124p's mode.
That's a serious upgrade, and we see that same psychology with WAW Classic Plus. The data mean indicates this isn't just turning the servers back on for the 2004 version of the game, it's an alternate history.
Right, new progression paths, altered storylines.
They are recognizing that players want the comfort of the Bedrock they know, but they want to see a different house built on top of it.
It is the safest possible bet in a volatile market. You leverage the existing emotional connection, but you deploy modern engineering to ensure it doesn't feel antiquated.
Rebuilding the past to secure the future. I love that. And it turns out, reconstructing the past isn't just a strategy for corporate game developers this week. It's exactly what astrophysicists are being forced to do, but on a scale of 10 billion years.
Oh, the James Webb Space Telescope data on galaxy cluster XLSAC-122.
Yes.
This is the definition of a structural collapse, but applied to our fundamental understanding of reality itself.
Let's frame how massive this is.
Mm.
The JWST is observing this cluster in what scientists call the cosmic noon era.
Right.
We are looking at light that has traveled 10.4 billion years to reach us. So we are seeing the universe as it was when it was only about 3 billion years old. But this cluster is acting billions of years older than it should be.
It's completely baffling the scientific community.
It's like archaeologists digging up a 3,000-year-old Roman ruin, but finding a fully functional smartphone inside. It completely breaks the established timeline.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the discrepancy comes down to dark matter density. The source highlights that XLSSC-122 is acting as a massive gravitational lens.
And just to establish the baseline for you listening, we know that gravitational lensing happens when a massive object has so much gravitational pull that it actually warps the fabric of space-time.
Right.
Bending the light of galaxies behind it like a magnifying glass.
Exactly. But the standard cosmic model says a cluster at this specific era shouldn't have anywhere near the mass required to do that.
So it shouldn't be possible.
Precisely. At 3 billion years post-Big Bang, the universe's architecture should still be highly diffuse. Dark matter and gas should be slowly, gradually clumping together.
Okay, so it should be spread out.
Yeah. For this cluster to bend light the way it is, it must possess an impossibly compact, hyper-dense dark matter core. Quoting Dr. Mark Broadwin, the lead researcher, he explicitly stated that this structure doesn't match any of our cosmological simulations.
So the blueprints we use to understand how the universe was built are just functionally broken. How does the scientific community even begin to rebuild that foundation?
Well, the source outlines three potential realities. The most conservative approach is that this is simply a one-in-a-million statistical anomaly, you know, a cosmic freak occurrence where matter just happened to aggregate abnormally fast in one specific pocket.
But knowing the JWST, it has a habit of finding these so-called anomalies everywhere it looks.
Okay.
So what are the other two more drastic possibilities?
The second is that our models of cosmic structure formation are fundamentally flawed.
Okay.
The building blocks are the same, but the rate at which dark matter can aggregate and collapse in on itself is much faster than our math previously allowed.
And the third?
The third requires tearing the house down to the studs. It proposes that the fundamental physics of dark matter in the early universe behave differently than they do today.
Wait, meaning the actual laws of physics evolved over time?
Yes. It suggests that the environmental conditions of the early universe, maybe extreme thermal dynamics or different particle interactions, caused dark matter to cluster aggressively. And as the universe expanded and cooled, those physical behaviors changed.
That is insane.
If that is true, we have to rewrite the timeline of cosmic evolution from scratch.
Finding out that the structural integrity of the universe's timeline is flawed is mind-bending. But our final source document brings this theme of collapsing foundations right back down to Earth and directly into your laptop.
Unfortunately, yes.
Because there is a fundamental flaw in the digital infrastructure we use to build our own software, and cybercriminals are actively weaponizing it to tear apart enterprise networks right now.
The Gin Stealer malware campaign. This represents a terrifying evolution in how threat actors are viewing corporate architecture.
So what does this all mean? The brief issues a critical alert regarding a new cross-platform malware called Gin Stealer. It is actively exploiting a specific known vulnerability cataloged as CVE-2026-48558.
And that's in a piece of software called Simple Help.
Right. Now, Simple Help is a remote monitoring and management tool, an RMM, used by over 6,000 organizations to let IT departments manage employee laptops remotely.
Which is a huge attack surface.
Massive.
Yeah.
And the vulnerability is an authentication bypass, which essentially means The hackers don't need to guess your password, they don't need to send you a phishing email, and they don't need to crack your encryption.
They just walk right in.
Exactly. The software have a logic flaw that literally leaves the back door wide open, allowing them to bypass the login screen and take control of the management server.
This raises an important question about how we design these systems, because it is the equivalent of acquiring a master key that unlocks every single door in a 6,000-room hotel simultaneously.
It's terrifying.
Once they compromise that RMM server, they can silently push the GinStealer malware out to thousands of employee endpoints at once.
But the shift in behavior here is what they are looking for once they get inside. They aren't scraping for credit cards or bank routing numbers anymore.
Yeah, they're past that.
GinStealer is custom-built to hunt for AI coding credentials. They are sweeping local machines for GitHub Copilot session tokens, Cursor AI keys, Claude API keys, and access tokens for cloud environments like AWS and Azure.
And this completely obliterates the traditional concept of a security perimeter.
How so?
Well, we have historically built corporate networks like a medieval castle. You know, as long as the firewall holds the moat, the inside is safe.
Right.
But when a single developer working from home has their laptop compromised via this RMM flaw, that single machine becomes a gateway to the entire enterprise infrastructure.
And I want to dig into the mechanics of how a stolen API key is actually utilized by a hacker, because it's not just about stealing data anymore. If a hacker lifts your company's Claude API key, what do they actually do with it?
They turn your own infrastructure against you. First, they can simply drain your financial resources. API calls are expensive.
Oh, right.
Threat actors will hijack your enterprise key to power their own massive automated phishing campaigns or crypto mining operations, leaving your company with a six-figure compute bill.
So they use your wallet to fund their attacks on other people.
Exactly. But the second, much more insidious use case involves supply chain poisoning.
Okay, what does that look like?
If they steal a GitHub Copilot or an OpenAI credential tied to a senior developer, they can potentially manipulate the AI assistant's outputs. They can subtly prompt the AI to generate malicious code or vulnerable dependencies,
which the developer then unknowingly commits right back into the company's core product.
Precisely. The tool you're using to build the software is quietly laying a rigged foundation.
Man. So if you or your company utilize SimpleHelp or any of these AI coding assistants, the brief lays out immediate mitigation steps. You have to update SimpleHelp to version 5.5.3 right now, which patches that back door.
Yes, do that immediately.
You also must mandate hardware-based two-factor authentication. And fundamentally, you can never store API keys in committed code or plain text configuration files. You have to use a dedicated secret management vault.
The architecture of how we develop software has just outpaced our ability to secure it. When AI, tools, and cloud access converge on a single developer's workstation, the stakes for a single compromised machine become absolutely catastrophic.
It requires a total reconstruction of how we handle trust and permissions in a network. And, you know, looking back at everything we've synthesized in this deep dive, it's incredible how fragile the architecture of our world really is.
It really is. I mean, we saw Dbrand lose 1,000 hours of physical engineering because they built on a legal foundation they didn't own.
We watched the corporate machinery of Microsoft casually erase the complex, years-in-the-making institutional knowledge of studios like Undead Labs.
We saw an industry so terrified of pouring new foundations that they are deploying modern physics engines purely to reconstruct alternate timelines of the past.
And expanding out to the cosmos, we watched the JWST shatter our understanding of dark matter, forcing astrophysicists to question if the laws of physics themselves evolved over time.
And right back here on Earth, we were watching our digital security perimeters crumble because the tools we use to build the future are being weaponized against us.
It is a constant cycle of collapse and reconstruction. Nothing is as permanent as we want to believe.
Nope.
Which leaves me with one final thought I want you to mull over as we wrap up this deep dive. Think about the legacy and the permanence of information in this cycle.
Yeah.
When an Xbox studio is shuttered and their unique community engine code is deleted, when an unlicensed digital design is legally wiped from the manufacturing floor, or when our secure AI credentials are stolen and exploited to rewrite our own software.
Yeah.
What actually remains of our digital footprint?
It's a great question.
Will cosmic observers, say, 10 billion years from now, look back at our digital cosmic noon and marvel at how our fragile ecosystem survived it all? Or are we, in our rush to build the future, currently writing the blueprints of our own inevitable collapse? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the world around you. Keep checking the foundations you build on. And we will see you next time.